Welcome to another edition of the TBN Writers Room podcast presented by Keeneland. My name is Bill Finley, and I am a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. Pink shirt, I'm the only one that got the memo. Kenny McPeak wants all Torpedo Anna fans to wear pink on Saturday. I won't be at the track on Saturday for Travers. So here's my homage to Torpedo Anna. I'm wearing a pink shirt, and I'm masculine enough. I'm confident enough in my masculinity that it doesn't bother me.
Bill is secure in his masculinity. That's a good thing. I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports. I didn't get the memo, but we'll have a lot to say about Torpedo Anna when we get to the Travers part of our podcast.
Real men wear pink, right, Bill?
There you go.
Yeah. Real men wear pink. I'm very proud of you, and I'm glad Sue went and bought you a pink shirt.
All right. I wasn't going to buy it myself.
I'm Zoe Calvin with First Racing, and I will be wearing pink on Saturday for the Travers. I'm just not wearing pink right now.
All right. Well, guys, of course, the big story this week is the Travers plus the big card at Saratoga with all the other grade one races. And we do this usually at Kentucky Derby time, and I think the Travers deserves this same sort of attention. Let's go through the field one by one, get some handicapping thoughts, some insights from Randy, Zoe, and myself, and then we can go from there and everybody can tell us what their pick is going to be in the race. You know, Torpedo Anna, will she win? Yeah, I hope so. And I think she will. She's going to be my pick. But we're going to learn so much about her in this race. Is she a very, very, very good filly? Or is she a superstar in the Rachel Alexandra kind of way? Now, she'll never catch up with Rachel's accomplishments because she ran so many times against males. But if she beats the boys in the Travers, I got to say, this is a once-in-a-generation horse. And I root for these kind of horses because it's good for the game and it's exciting. And thank goodness Kenny McPeak is not going by the book like everyone else. He thinks outside the box and is running his filly in the Travers.
Yeah, I'm a numbers guy, obviously. I'm a speed figure guy. I've been on the buyer speed figure team for 40 years. And when you get a horse that wins in dominant fashion, right? Sometimes they're winning by open margins because they're running against horses that are dramatically inferior, okay? And it's a bit of an optical illusion, and then the numbers come out, and their numbers aren't as dominant as the visuals would suggest. And that's where speed figures are really good at zeroing in and focusing on, you know, is this a Rachel Alexandra, or is it or flight line, or is it a horse that just happens to be beating up on, you know, average competition? If you look at the numbers, you would say that Torpedo Anna, as dominant as she has been, doesn't quite stack up to Dornock, doesn't quite stack up to Sierra Leone, maybe a couple of the others in the race. But even though I'm a numbers guy, I'm not going by the numbers here, because visually she's just, it's not the fact that she's been winning by open margins. It's like she showed in the coaching club, American Oaks. It's the quick turn of foot and the quick dominant acceleration and overcoming a hop at the start where she's last going into the first turn and overcoming some of the other obstacles. Versatility, going to the early lead in the Kentucky Oaks. We're sitting, you know, off the pace. She's got an inside post, which I love, because you know she's going to save ground at least on the first turn, okay? And that's big. A lot of people tend to underrate that. So primarily because I don't trust Sierra Leone, I'm going to go with you, Bill. I think Torpedo Anna, despite the fact that, a filly hasn't won the Travers in, what is it, a century or something like that, you know, I think she's in a, she's in a pretty good spot here, and I'm gonna take her.
She's terrific. I mean, there is nothing that you can say against her. She has overcome every obstacle, including her $40,000 purchase price. Who'd have thought a filly by Fast Anna would be one of the favorites, probably the favorite in the Travers? And, you know, you could say that she's run to her competition and run over her competition, which is exactly what she's done. Now, we saw how Candied ran. We saw Power Squeeze, who was third to her, two starts back in the Grade 1 Acorn, came back to win just this past weekend. So the form backs up as well. I'm not sure I love the one hole for a filly drawn down on the inside. Now, she's tall. I went by the barn the other day and took a good look at her. She looks as good as I've ever seen her in my life. Her workout at 7 a.m. on the main track was excellent. She was rank. That's my only problem with her, but she usually goes at 5:30 in the morning. So, you know, they messed around with her schedule to get her in the daylight, to get her on the main track, on a good track at 7. She was ranked trying to run off with Danny, but she still finished up her work as strong as she started it, which is a very good sign when you're going 59-4 over the main strip here at Saratoga. I'm not picking her. Ooh. Sorry, guys. I am rooting for her. I will be wearing my pink, and I hope to God she proves me wrong, but I'm going elsewhere.
All right. Well, we'll find out shortly who Zoe is picking. Number two is Sierra Leone. Can this horse win? Of course he can. It's a very, very good horse, but I'm done with him. I've picked this horse like every single time. And, you know, he always runs well. He runs well enough to suggest that if he just got a little bit better trip or if he didn't lug in, he was going to beat these horses. You know what? He's a very good horse, but I think there are better horses in this race. And he's still going to be a short price because of Chad Brown and Flavian Pratt. Yeah. And now this, of course, will be the one where he'll win and pay $12. And I'll be sitting on the sidelines ripping up my tickets on Torpedo Hannah.
Yeah, I thought his race in the Jim Dandy was the best race of his career. Okay, to me, that's as good as he can run. And Fierceness obviously ran a Fierceness A level type of race, which, as we know, famously, he doesn't always give us. And I don't think Sierra Leone lost anything at all in terms of reputation, to me at least, in finishing second in the Jim Dandy. Now, there is a narrative out there that, okay, they figured him out. Okay, he didn't lug in that badly in the Jim Dandy. He ran much straighter. So that's really encouraging for the Travers. I don't buy that because, as Zoe pointed out before that race, she thought they should put him on the rail because horses on the rail obviously can't really lug in because the rail is right there. And if you watch the head-on replay of the Jim Dandy, he was thinking about the lugging in thing in the last eighth of a mile. He moved a little closer to the rail. He was kind of leaning in that direction. To me, if he was in the middle of the track, we would have seen the same old Sierra Leone that we've seen before. I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think they've corrected anything, or at least I'm not going to believe they have until I actually see it play out on the racetrack. He's got post two. Torpedo Anna's got the rail. So we know Sierra Leone's going to save ground at least on one of the turns. But I think the primary reason he ended up on the rail through the stretch in the Jim Dandy is because Johnny Velasquez took Fierceness out to the middle of the racetrack the way it played out strategically. And Flavian Pratt was kind of forced to duck in toward the inside, and it played to his advantage. I'm not sure you're going to see that exact scenario play out. So, and Sierra Leone's not the kind of horse who's going to be nifty enough and quick enough to hit the holes with quick acceleration and sit on the rail and take advantage of a rail opening and dart through there. He's more like a runaway freight train. He doesn't stop and start, right? So I don't think he's necessarily, you can count on him to get another rail trip. So I'm going to expect Sierra Leone to be the lugging in Sierra Leone that we've seen in the past. Maybe that's still good enough to win at a mile and a quarter, but I'm going to pick against him for that reason.
He's still leaning in, and he does it. He's been doing it in the morning in his morning works, not severely, but I mean, when he gets under pressure, he will lean in. And I have a feeling that Pratt's going to stay on the rail and just bide his time and come through on the rail. Because, guys, the only thing harder to ride than a horse lugging out is one lugging in. It's impossible. It's so much easier. I don't know why. I don't know. It's because everyone's a little better right-handed. I have no idea. But when a horse is lugging out, it's easier to get them going forward. When a horse is lugging in, especially on top of other horses, it's impossible to get that forward momentum. You're almost just pulling back. So his only way through is going to be on the rail, as far as I'm concerned.
There's another Chad Brown horse in the race. It's the 3-horse Unmatched Wisdom, winner of the restricted Curlin Stakes in his last start. Irad Ortiz Jr. takes over for Flavian Pratt, who goes with Sierra Leone, as Zoe just mentioned. Very nice horse, but we've got to see more from him than we've seen so far. He has to improve off that race in the Curlin. It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it, but he didn't get a particularly fast number, a 99. It was a fairly easy field in there. But he's a horse that is getting better all the time. I'm not going to pick him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is in the mix somewhere. And also, Randy, if you want to talk about this, or Zoe, what is going to be the pace scenario? Does he send this horse from the 3-post and try to get to the lead, knowing that Dornach outside of him is probably going to want to do the exact same thing?
And Fierceness will be right up there, too, on the outside. I mean, Fierceness has speed as well. And who knows what, you know, what Brian Hernandez is going to do with Torpedo Anna. I mean, she's shown in the Kentucky Oaks that she can be right up there and be a pace factor as well. The thing that you know, I mean, Unmatched Wisdom, you get Irad Ortiz this time. You've had Flavian Pratt. Pratt chose, he had options, right? He chooses to ride Sierra Leone instead of Unmatched Wisdom. So I'm going to let Flavian kind of dictate my opinion on this. But, you know, the 99 in the Curlin, that's okay. He's picking up 6 pounds. That's a couple of points. That's a couple of buyer points. That's the way I handicap, at least. And he made an uncontested, easy lead in the Jim Dandy that he is unlikely to get in the Travers. So for those reasons, I'm going to lean against him.
Me too. He's pretty much had everything his own way. This is a race laden with speed. And don't think Torpedo Anna, judging on her body language and how she's been training, don't think she's going to back off it either. It's going to be pace aplenty.
Next horse is Corporate Power. None of us necessarily like Unmatched Wisdom. This horse was beaten by Unmatched Wisdom in the Curlin last time out by a length. Shug McGahey is the trainer. Good horse, not good enough to win this race, though.
Going to have to step up for sure. He's got the right trainer behind him, Shug. He knows how to win this race. He did come in with a bullet work, but he's flying under the radar. He can sit off the pace, though. That's a big plus. He could pick up some pieces late.
Yeah, he's the one that went after Unmatched Wisdom in the Curlin when Unmatched Wisdom had everything his own way and set a nice, easy pace. It was Javier Castellano that decided that he had to go after Unmatched Wisdom a little earlier maybe than he would have otherwise wanted to. He still held on for second, but again, I agree with you guys. I mean, he's a nice horse. I'd love to own him, but it's hard to take him in this spot for me.
All right, we move on now to Batten Down, trained by Bill Mott, the Ohio Derby winner. Didn't fare nearly as well in the Jim Dandy when third, beaten 6¾ lengths by Fierceness and Sierra Leone. So he was third best in the Jim Dandy. How do you go from that to being best in the Travers? Well, that's going to be very hard to do, and that's why he's going to be 25-1. Again, just like I said with Corporate Power, same thing, and some of the same things Randy said. You know, this is a beautifully bred horse. Has made $454,000. Probably going to do a lot more in its career down the road because you got Bill Mott behind him. You know this horse is going to continue to improve. But just like Corporate Power, I just don't think he's good enough.
Ditto. And he's going to be more pace. The only races he's won have been on the lead. So I don't know if he's going to be quick enough to be on the lead, but he's going to be throwing down the gauntlet with the rest of them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Junior Alvarado chooses to ride him in the wake of his race in the Jim Dandy. Because if you go back and look at the Jim Dandy, Batten Down was in between Dornach and Fierceness. Okay, and going into the first turn, Dornach showed speed from the inside. Fierceness and Johnny V was in the 3-path. Batten Down was right in between them. And the other two just seemed to have a little bit more early foot than Batten Down did. And instead of sending Batten Down to try to hold his position between horses, Junior probably wisely decided to just ease back a little bit, or at least not try to really push forward and let the other two go and stalk them from a third place perspective. And either it was that trip or just the fact that he just straight wasn't good enough. He was third and a well-beaten third. He ran the same number that he's been running. So I would tend to believe that he just isn't quite good enough to turn the tables on those horses this time.
We go now to Honor Marie. We're running a little late here. Anybody have anything interesting to say about him? I don't. If not, let's pass and move on to Door Knock. Sound okay?
That sounds fine to me.
All right. Yeah. Now let's get to Door Knock. And we love the tenacity of this horse, the way he's such a fighter. He is the best male horse in this race, I believe. Though fierceness, you never know what kind of fierceness is going to show up. But one of the things I think is going to be going against him is, you know, Danny Gargan has discovered this horse likes to be on the lead. He runs his best races when he does that. He's not going to get an easy, uncontested lead in here. There are a couple other horses that are going to battle him early for the lead. Leaving from the outside, next outside post, he's going to be perhaps a little bit wide in the first turn. I wouldn't be the least bit shocked if he won this race. Torpedo Anna were not in the race, I think I probably would pick him, but I don't think she can beat the girl on Saturday, and I don't see this horse working out the kind of trip that he seems to need to get the job done.
Maybe it's going to be Torpedo Anna. Maybe it's going to be Unmatched Wisdom. Maybe it's going to be Batten Down. Those three horses are to his inside. Think back to the Belmont. 1.25 miles at Saratoga, same distance, same track, right? Dornak didn't make an uncontested lead. He's sitting right outside of Seize the Gray. He's lapped on Seize the Gray, second about a half length, and still manages to go to the lead, to repel the bid by Mind Frame, and be drawing away at the end. Kind of similar to what happened in the Haskell, except he was on the lead in the Haskell. If he gets that kind of trip, sitting right outside of one horse, lapped on the outside, I've got no problem with Dornak and the kind of trip he's likely to get in this spot. Is he going to be third? Is he going to be fourth? Is he going to be a little wide? Who knows? I mean, we'll see about the horses to his inside. But he's a fighter. And I think I have a feeling this is Zoe's pick.
You're right. He is going to be my pick in here purely because he's a fighter, much like his trainer. Sorry, Danny. And he likes to get in the mix of it. He's well-drawn on the outside. I'd actually prefer if he got the one hole. If him and Torpedo could switch, that would be really nice. I think they'd both be happy. And, you know, he makes his own trip now. He can be on the outside. I don't care if he's four wide. He can get the distance. He's the only horse that I've watched throughout the summer who has trained exactly the same every single time. I love the way he's coming into the race. Do I think he's a better horse than Torpedo Anna and Fierceness? No, but I believe he might be the best on Saturday. So that's right. But I'm really rooting for Torpedo Anna. I'm so stuck.
So let's get to the last horse in the race, Fierceness. And, you know, what more needs to be said about this horse that hasn't been said 9, 10, 11, 12 times, even on this podcast? I don't know what's going to happen with him. He continues to be the horse that you just have to guess on. And even as Jim Dandy, even though he won and got back over the 100 buyer plateau, the 103, didn't have that electric look that the Florida Derby had, or that electric look that he had in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I mean, he can win by 6-7 lengths. He can be dead last. If you can figure this horse out, Zoe, then you're a lot better at this game than I am.
And I can't. I think we'll just let Fierceness do the talking. And it's as simple as that.
Now, in the Florida Derby, he ran the first quarter in 24.06 on a very speed-favoring racetrack with a short stretch in Gulfstream Park. Was able to completely control the pace and against much easier competition, right? Catalyst was second. Grand Mo the first was third. So I'm not going to look at the Florida Derby and expect that kind of a race out of Fierceness, because he's not going to make the lead in 24.06 in the Travers Stakes. Let's just face it. He's probably going to get a three wide trip, sitting right outside, right up on the pace, close up. If you don't like him because he runs a good race, bad race, that's bogus. That's ridiculous to even handicap in that manner. It's just the fact that, if he can get the three wide stalking trip, be third by a length and a half, maybe just lapped on two other horses to his inside, and he can deliver the same sort of performance as he had in the Jim Dandy, then he could very easily win this race. He really could. I mean, I don't buy the fact that because he ran good in the Jim Dandy, that means he won't run so well in the Travers.
How about this? The two males on this show pick Torpedo Anna, and then the female goes for Doorknock. It's not supposed to work that way, Zoe. But some good good insights and all that. And Zoe, I want to see that pink shirt on you on Saturday. Okay.
Oh, I would have a pink dress.
Pink dress. Okay. Very good. All right.
I won't make you wear a pink dress, but I'll wear one. Okay.
Thanks for that.
Bill is not that secure in his masculinity to wear a pink dress.
You got that right, Randy.
I want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Now, in the span of a couple of hours on Saturday, it was clearly demonstrated why you need to make plans to attend the Keeneland September sale. Listen to this. First at Saratoga, Power Squeeze, a mere $50,000 September purchase, won the grade one, $600,000 Alabama Stakes. Then just a few hours later, the best name in horse racing, Ice Cream, You Scream, a mere $55,000 Keeneland September purchase, won the grade one, $300,000 Del Mar Oaks. Keeneland September begins September the 9th. Make plans to attend. I will be there with bells on, and we'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the management and staff of Keeneland, I would like to welcome you to the September Yearling Sale. Good to have you back with us.
The energy at Keeneland Book One is unlike any other sale that you'll go to.
It is the marketplace.
The center of the horse universe.
It's electric. You can't replicate the urgency that's at Keeneland September.
Quality in quantity.
Keeneland September Book One, every breeder's dream.
This week's Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by none other than a really fast horse, Life is Good, one of those fast sires at Windstar Farm, and Into Mischief's fastest son, by the way. And seeing what we've seen from Into Mischief as a stallion, that says an awful lot. Breeders are eagerly anticipating Life is Good's first weanlings this fall, especially after his first in-foal mares brought up to $1.2 million at the mixed sales last fall. Because of Life is Good and what we saw on the racetrack, his progeny expected to be fast. They're expected to be precocious. And after all, Life is Good was a debut two-year-old winner by over nine lengths, TDN Rising Star, and of course went on to earn nine triple-digit buyer speed figures and three grade one stakes. Life is Good standing at Windstar Farm. And this week's Fastest Horse of the Week comes out of the Island Stakes at Monmouth on Saturday. Subsanador, shipped from his West Coast base by trainer Richard Mandela. And not only that, he brought Mike Smith with him. And Subsanador wins the Island by a length and a half over Il Miracolo. You think, okay, a length and a half, not that big of a deal. 15 lengths back to the third place finisher in the Island. Subsanador gets a buyer speed figure of 102, which tops the week. And perhaps, I think, the biggest storyline out of the Island, not just the performance by Subsanador, but the fact that it's the first United States graded stakes win for the Wathnan stable of the Emir of Qatar, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, who's been buying up seemingly everything that's for sale in Europe. He was pointing for the Royal Ascot meet with a lot of horses that he bought right on top of the meeting. He's trying to make an impact in the United States as well. And Subsanador is Wathnan Racing's very first graded stakes winner in North America, the fastest horse of the week. As always, our Guest of the Week segment is brought to you by The Green Group, a tax accounting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry and specializing in saving you money on your taxes.
We welcome in now The Green Group Guest of the Week, and is the Vice President of Racing at Kentucky Downs, Ted Nicholson. And Ted, welcome to the show. And everybody, of course, is looking forward to this meet as we do every year. And the big purses are the primary reason. But it seems every single year they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Are you guys at anywhere close to a peak point? How is it that every year the purses continue to go up?
Well, thanks for having me, and good morning, everybody. Honestly, Jenny loves to put those press releases out. There will be a peak at some point. Business has been very strong on the gaming side, so we continue to elevate in our goal, which we've talked about on this program, I believe, a couple of years ago. I mean, our plan was to get graded races. I think there was a number of years where we weren't getting the respect that we thought we deserved from the graded stakes committee. And, you know, money helps. And I think we've seen that over the last few years. We now have 9 graded races. So we got to that point, and now it's just a matter of us elevating our game to the point where we're going to start getting grade ones. And there's plans in place to accomplish that. But yeah, the money is, we're going to peak at some point. And I think we're pretty darn close, to be honest with you.
So, Tad, it's been, 11 months since we've seen horses race at Kentucky Downs. In that interim, in the boardrooms and the management meetings and all the preparation for this racing season, what's been going on behind the scenes?
A little bit, Randy, of what I just talked about is just what can we do, you know, to get our game elevated even more? I mean, yes, we have the world's best jockeys that'll come and the best trainers and owners are making more and more plans to come. I mean, we're seeing ticket sales up this year, 30% over last year, which is crazy. I don't think there's a racetrack in the U.S. that could say that. So we've done some things to the property. For those of you who have been to the track, we used to be all asphalt. We used to be all gravel, and now we're all asphalt. The entire parking lot, which is an enormous space, is now asphalt. So people coming don't have to try and, avoid any kind of holes or ruin their shoes just getting into the racetrack, which is good. We built a brand new pavilion for the horsemen. That's right there next to the other finish line pavilion. It's big, it's tall, it's expansive, and I think they're going to really, really enjoy it. We also added a suite that will be just to the south or further down the stretch from the chalet, which we put up a few years ago. So we're always trying to improve the property and improve the experience for the guest.
For the people at home that 90% of your customers sitting at home, betting on the computer, right, betting on TV, whatever. Anything they'll notice about the simulcast product that might be slightly different tweaks from a year ago?
They were working on something right now. I'll be honest with you. I'm trying to find a company that will come and do drone behind the horses. And a lot of people are really good at doing drones, but integrating that into a simulcast show with our producer, David Loynan, it makes it a little bit difficult to find that. So it's almost like a needle in a haystack because it's so rare unless you're a big production company like, you know, NBC or ESPN.
Interesting. Okay.
We like the drone footage, so I'm hoping you're. I know a guy that flies drones, so if you need some help, I can send him your.
We have people that do drones, and they do them very well. It's just we're trying to find out how that gets integrated, and right. it's not an easy fix. So we're working on it. I still got 9 days.
Aren't there bird issues also with the drones? I've read that, like Zoe may know more about that at Santa Anita. I think they've had some issues with that. But
a few issues, but as long as you're behind the horses, it's okay. You don't want to be in front and your drone gets a bird strike and falls in front of the field. That could be a disaster. So let's talk about the money. Ted, can you explain to the average Joe, and I mean myself, how the purse revenue is made? I understand there are two casinos there right now, and the revenue there is what, like $2 billion a year or something? How does that integrate into the purses, and how does some of the purses go between the other Kentucky tracks as well?
It's a great question. So, yeah, so we own, besides the property that we sit on with the racetrack, we also have a satellite location that's in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is a beautiful location if you've ever find yourself in Bowling Green. And so, yes, we do over $2 billion in HHR handle a year, which that a portion of that money goes to the association purses. And then there's a portion of that money that goes to KTDF, which, you know, the KTDF is a big piece of our purse structure. So if you're a Kentucky bred and you're not racing and you have a turf horse and you're not racing by us, you got to be scratching your head. Why don't I do that? We also own a harness track that's in a town called Corbin, Kentucky, and that is south of Lexington, about an hour and a half. And we have a satellite location from that racetrack that is just across the border from Tennessee, about an hour north of Knoxville. And that's in a town called Williamsburg. And so the monies that are generated at that location go towards purse structures for the racetrack. But then we split that. Some of that purse money actually goes to the Keeneland, because Keeneland is a minor owner in that property. So when I say we, the KTDF, the advisory board of the KTDF, and the HBPA, and we have a great relationship with the folks at the HBPA, whether it's Rick Hiles or Alex Foley, we send purse money to the other racetracks. So this year we're sending over $4 million to Ellis Park, and we also send over $6 million to Keeneland.
Wow. Can you send some to California?
I think somebody brought that up a few weeks ago.
Ted, we used to talk this time of year for many years about the graded stakes situation. And you guys let everyone know, you know, we think we're getting not getting a fair shake here. Since that time, you mentioned how many graded stakes races you have. I forget the number that you threw out, but you also now have your first grade one stakes race, as well as in the Franklin Simpson Stakes. I know you want every race to be a grade one, and who wouldn't, but are you now, you know, think that the graded stakes committee has caught up to the Kentucky Downs phenomenon, or is there still a little ways to go?
Well, obviously, I'm going to tell you that there's still a ways to go. You know, if you look at our 2-year-old races, none of them are graded, and they're hard to be graded. I mean, you all are seasoned vets in this business. You know that, you know, this time of year, there's not a lot of graded turf races for 2-year-olds. And so, you know, you see these horses that are running by us, or they run at Keeneland, and they're coming out of maiden races and they're winning a race. Maybe it's a grade three at Keeneland. And then their next race is going to be the Breeders' Cup, which obviously is a grade one. So for us to get those to a grade one might be difficult, but I certainly would love to see them all graded. They're all $1 million races this year. So I would certainly love to see all of those at least at the grade three level, you know, going forward. And as you said, Bill, I think after this year, we're going to see it, hopefully, you know, I'm a superstitious guy, but I'm hoping that we can get the some of the grade twos up to grade one, and some of the grade threes up to two, or maybe even leapfrog and get to a ones. You never stop pushing for your goals, and I think our goal is to have as many grade ones as we possibly could get, and I think we're realistic, knowing that those 2-year-old races are going to be difficult to be the grade ones, but the others definitely are in our wheelhouse.
If Kentucky Downs doesn't get a really, really nice Christmas gift from Mike Maker every year, you sure the hell should. But it's not just Mike. I mean, it's a lot of top trainers, as you mentioned, top jockeys, full fields. The only thing I've seen that you guys have to sort of combat is the perception around the country with some trainers that Kentucky Downs is an unusual track. It's a quirky track. Some horses handle it. Some horses don't. Right. I mean, there's a lot of, as we've often talked about, change doesn't come very easily in thoroughbred racing. And, you know, a lot of people put maybe too much emphasis on that. Is that something that you guys have had to combat over the years?
No. I mean, you are what you are. You know, our racetrack is unique. We like to use that term more than anything else. We're a unique racetrack. We're not looking to change, you know, the adulations of the race course. That's what makes us unique. I mean, and it's kind of fun actually to see when people do come to the track, you know, real pros come, you know, whether they're media or they're horse players, and they come for the first time and they look across the racetrack and they see the mile pole and they look to their left and they see that gradual, you know, incline, and you get to that three quarter pole. And then all of a sudden you see it go downhill and you start to shake your head going, I never noticed it that much on TV. Well, of course you're not. And then the one thing that people really don't see or feel or could even grasp is the fact that when you get to the top of the stretch, you've got 3/8 of a mile to go. And that's why it takes two cameras to cover it. But then you get halfway up, you know, and I literally it's up the stretch. You get to the midpoint in the stretch and you're going uphill. So if you got a tired animal, you're gasping, you know. You got to be fit to win here. And that's always been the case.
All right. I'm going to tell a quick little story of my first foray to Kentucky Downs. And Ted, you'll appreciate this. So I drive in, I'm riding for Mike Stidham, and I'm on the favorite, and I don't get there in time to walk the turf course. And it's 1.5 miles. And I'm like, okay, well, how can you go wrong, right? So I said, any tricks? And this was the old dueling grounds, when it was dueling grounds. And one guy goes to me, goes, whatever you do, don't move until you see the tractor. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'll look for the tractor. So we come down the hill and we turn for home, and I'm looking around and I'm like, where the hell's this tractor? I'm like, oh God, I must have passed the tractor. So I start riding like hell, and I'm riding 1/8 of a mile, and I pick my head up. There's the bloody tractor. And I'm like, oh my God. So I've got 1/4 of a mile to go uphill, and I win by a head. Stidham comes down to me and he's like, Red, what the hell were you doing? I'm like, I don't know, but I won. I won. And then I went and like ran the whole turf course just to make sure I didn't mess up for the next race. So it is truly unique. It's fun family atmosphere. And it's just, I think if no one's ever gone there, they are truly missing out. I really have enjoyed the times that I've gone there and ridden there. And it's a really cool track to ride.
You think the tractor's still there?
I don't think the tractor.
But yeah, I love that. I love that story because it's so true. I can't tell you how many riders have, you know, flown into Nashville, gotten here late, you know, didn't go out on the racetrack and check it out, which I know a lot of riders do that. I mean, it's, you know, why not? You know, check out the course before you get on it. I've watched some people make some big time mistakes. You know, when you're riding down the backstretch, another thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is when they're running up that hill along the backstretch, they're so far off the rail. So far off the rail. And then there's a right-hand turn. So, you know, you don't want to be on the rail because you're wasting 30, 40 feet in each stride. Whereas the smart riders, and I'm sure what happens is that, you know, they're going to go in a pack, and you're not going to all of a sudden go, well, the rail's wide open. You know, that doesn't happen. I think, you know, our riders are pros now. But I think years ago when it was dueling grounds, I think, you know, guys didn't know.
Correct. I have one question. It seems to me, like Randy mentioned Mike Maker, he stables all his horses there and trains over the track in the morning. Joe Sharp does the same thing. Do you think there's an advantage to people that ship in and stay? Because there is a beautiful stabling area right over to the side that it seems like only those guys seem to know about.
Well, so the we don't have any training. That is the problem. You can't work a horse over the course.
But you can't go out there anymore?
You can jog a horse around, around the dogs, and Butch will put dogs up, on the outside 20, 25 feet.
Right.
I'm assuming the only advantage, Zoe, that I could see would be that you're not shipping, but we have such a limited amount of stabling currently, and that's part of my plan going forward is to add more and more stalls. But the only real advantage is that you're not getting if you're stabled at Keeneland or Churchill, you're not getting in a van that morning and shipping down. That's truly the only real advantage because you're not working over the turf course. They're not going to the rail and getting a good run. So that would be it.
Well, Ted, some of the old timers will tell you that today's horses are overtrained anyway. So maybe that's part of Mike Maker's secret there at Kentucky Downs.
Yeah. Well, and truly, because we have such a limited amount of space, a guy like Mike might have, six or eight stalls, but he's going to run 40. Right. So, I'm sure what he's doing is just running, shipping back and forth and, using it as a revolving door.
Yeah.
Ted, we talked an awful lot about the purses as well we should, but I want to switch the gears in the other side of the coin. You can make an argument that Kentucky Downs is the best betting meet of any in the country. I mean, I know it's apples to oranges when you compare it to Saratoga, some other places, but you've got huge purses, you've got huge fields, and you've got a reasonable takeout. How is that all reflected in the business for the other side of the business? Has handle been going up year after year? And, what can you achieve in that area?
As far as the purses, the handle goes, the handle has been growing I've been here 10 years now, and every year we've gone up in handle. It's been, a great stair step every year. Last year we did $84 million in 7 race days. I'm hoping if we could reach $90 million, that would be outstanding. It's a great thing when you have a great product that people notice. And so I think over the years, little by little, everybody has circled us on the calendar, tried not to forget. Oh yeah, that's opening day. I want to handicap that card. It's a challenge for horse players. I think, we do have a lot of, 11 and 12 horse fields. We do have, we run a lot of maidens. One of the things that our guys have told me is that the maiden races, even the ones that don't have, they're all firsters. Those races will handle more than a 9-horse or a 10-horse claiming race, a 30 claimer on the grass. You would think that would be something that everybody wants to sink their teeth into. But what we have found is that those maiden races, people love them. So, that plus, our stakes are strong but people enter, and the biggest complaint I get, to be honest with you, is I can't get in. So, it's a good problem to have, but, I wish we had more days. I wish we could spread it out, but, we're locked into a gap. And so, we have our 7 days. When I got here, it was 5, and we were able to magically create another lane. And so now we're able to run 7 days. I don't have any more space to create another lane. So, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
One thing you've been cognizant on is post times, because at the beginning of your meet, you're going up against Del Mar and Saratoga. And I know several people that have been avoiding stakes at both places to come and run at Kentucky Downs. But one thing that you've been very good at is making sure you don't run on top of each other. And I'm not just talking about a minute or two. There's a sizable gap. Do you have like one person that plans this all out?
For a long time, it was me. we hired a few years ago, we hired Ken Kirkner, who used to work for the Breeders' Cup. And he did their post times. He did their betting menus. So, Ken joined a laundry list of all-stars that have, come on our team. It's just truly amazing. But, yes, that is a, cognizant thing, Zoe, that we like to do, is to try and stay at least 10 to 15 minutes off of Saratoga. And we do our best to try and stay off of Del Mar. It gets a little tough late in the day. You know, we're ending, Saratoga's ending, and Del Mar's starting. And so we're always trying to massage that. But quite honestly, if you're paying attention, and it's amazing to me that some general managers don't do this, but if you're paying attention to what all the players around the country are looking at, it's not that difficult to throw up an extra 5 minutes on the board. You, instead of doing the dog racing, you know, circle the wagons like some tracks do for 6 or 7 minutes, I find that to be incredibly annoying. I'd rather just put up the right time and go with it and stay off of the you know, those other two that's in your competition.
Well, Ted, the meet is right around the corner. I know everybody's excited. I know our team is all excited. I've been there a couple times. It is an absolutely great place. And like I think you said earlier, true story, if you're a racing fan, this is bucket list stuff here, to visit Kentucky Downs and enjoy the great racing that they have there. So thanks so much for joining us, Ted, as a Green Group Guest of the Week, and have a great meet.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I hope I see all of you at the track this year.
Hope so.
And as the Green Group Guest of the Week, Kentucky Downs' Ted Nicholson will receive a free one-hour tax consultation with Lynn Green et al. At the Green Group. For more information on what the Green Group can do for you, even if you're not in the thoroughbred industry, you just happen to be clicking on this, you found it online, you can go to www.greenco.com.
When it comes to the horse industry, tax laws are complicated and unique. That is why most people overpay on their taxes. Why not get a second opinion from the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred industry? With over 800 clients in the horse business alone, the Green Group has the expertise to save you taxes. There is a reason the most successful owners, breeders, trainers, vets, and horsemen use the Green Group as their tax advisors. We save you taxes. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with current-edge tax-saving strategies, produces positive tax-saving results for clients. Take advantage of this special offer. The Green Group will give you a complimentary and confidential review of your tax return. Contact us at 732-634-5100. Or visit our website at www.greenco.com.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Stone Street Bred and Raise. Stone Street will offer 14 horses in Book One. Wow, that's a lot. We told you about a couple of them last week, but who else do they have on offer? Let's take a look at the next to last hit through the ring on day one. Be a filly by Quality Road out of Rachel's Valentina, who was, of course, the Grade 1 winning daughter of Horse of the Year, Rachel Alexander. On day two, we'll see Hip 319, the full sister to the multiple Grade 1 winner, Cyberknife. She's by Gunrunner out of the multiple stakes winning mare, Awesome Flower, and she is beautiful. Later that day, check out hip number 347, a hubba hubba good-looking colt by Carlin out of the multiple grade one stakes winner Cavorting, who is a full sister to multiple grade one winner Clairiere. That's some beautiful speed right there.
So obviously not just the Travers on the card at Saratoga on Saturday. There are four grade one races, and why don't we go through those fairly quickly? Of course, we also want to talk about the Pat O'Brien featuring Randy Moss's very favorite horse, Señor Buscador. So, okay. The ninth race is the Resorts World Casino Sword Dancer, six horse field. Definitely a race that's been, I'm sure, got hurt by Kentucky Downs. I'm sure there's three or four other horses that might have gone in this race, if not for the chance to run for a much bigger purse at Kentucky Downs. This looks like Appleby versus Appleby, Measured Time versus Silver Knot. And both of them have a little bit of early speed. It'll be interesting to see how William Buick and Flavian Pratt figure the things out. I can't go against Measured Time. He won the Manhattan over Nation's Pride, who came back to win the Arlington Million. It's going to be an Appleby exacta.
Okay, yeah, Yep. He'll be on top. All right. Pratt, he can make his own trip.
Yeah, it's, you know, look, how often do you see Charlie Appleby horses come to the United States? Here's two of them in a six horse field, and they look like the speed. They look like the dominant speed in the race. You know, essentially Europeans, although Silver Knot's run nine of his last 10 starts in the United States, they're very hard to separate. They're hard to separate on numbers. Measured Time wasn't that quick from the gate in his last race, but then he, you know, roared up on the outside to take the lead. Then he was kind of throttled back a little bit. I find it very difficult to separate these two. But since Measured Time is a slightly higher price than Silver Knot, I'll take Measured Time. But Silver Knot, real quick, his last four furlongs in the Bowling Green, 11.57, 11.57, 11.37, and 11.64. How are you going to make up ground on a horse that finishes like that?
You can't.
Tough race.
Yeah, we move on now to the Ballerina, race 10. I am going to pick, I know I'm going to get the pronunciation. Please, somebody correct me, Skyla, S-C-Y-L. Randy, you got the word on how they pronounce that horse?
It's Skyla, I believe. Yeah, I think you're right.
She's actually a full sister to Batten Down and will be later on in the Travers. She's a horse that I'm expecting will improve off a really nice second place finish in the Clement Hirsch behind it at Dare Manor. Right at this point in her career, she's probably not quite fast enough to beat some of the other horses in here, but this is a Mott horse. It's a 4-year-old. That's right when the Mott horses are going to start hitting their sweet spot and should improve. She improved quite a bit in her last start to finish second there, won the Florida Lee before that. And I'm hoping if she can step it up another three or four lengths and get into the winner's circle.
Well, you say Skyla, I say Scylla. It just makes me always think of Scylla Black. I like her, but I think it's going to be a chalky first couple of stakes. I like Vava in that spot, guys.
Yeah, it's very difficult on paper, you know, to pick against Vava. She's even money on the program line. So, you know, I mean, there's picking and then there's betting. It, you know, I don't know if you want to bet on Vava necessarily at even money, certainly not straight. Positano Sunset comes off a big second behind her. Society every now and then, mainly when she's in against inferior competition, you know, runs these gigantic races. And Skyla, Scylla, however you want to say her name, obviously has a lot of good form too. But Vava is going to be tough to beat.
I can move on now to the Forgo. This is probably the toughest race to handicap of all the races on the card. Very evenly matched. I'm going to go for Mulliken. This is a horse, again, that is on the improve. And I think that this horse, after winning the John A. Nayrud, is ready to take that next step up. And we don't have, XBTV doesn't have Keeneland Works this time of year, which is a shame because I'd love to see the August 17th workout at Keeneland for this filly. This colt, 47-1 breezing bullet workout, but you should be able to get 6 or 7 to 1 on whoever you like in this race. It's that wide open.
Yeah, it is a terrific betting race, the grade one Forgo. I like a couple of prices in here. Full Screen, Mark Cassie, Dylan Davis. Dylan riding Lights Out right now. He comes out of some good races. He was second to Blazing Sevens just three starts ago. Yes, he's stepping into graded stakes action. He's 20-1 on the morning line. I agree with you that Milliken is probably the horse to beat for Rudy Brissett. But how about Anchor for Phil Bauer? Phil is winning at 45%, and he continues to win. Many thanks to him for coming on this last week. Do you know what Anchor is? I did a bit of rabbit holing because I figured that maybe I could beat Randy to this one. Anchor is an archaeological site in Southeast Asia. It's about 400 square kilometers, and it's probably one of the best archaeological sites you'll ever want to see. And I let Anchor on top at a price who's also been training incredibly well.
Is that Anchor Watt? I've heard of Anchor Watt.
Yeah, that's the whole archaeological site is called Anchor, and then Anchor Watt is in there and a couple of other very important places that I can't remember. That was as far as I got.
Okay. I'm going to take Gun Pilot. I don't like the inside post position at 7/8 of a mile. I don't particularly like his last race at Saratoga in the True North, but he was bumped around a little bit. Maybe that was an excuse. His two previous races I thought were really strong. I don't have a really huge opinion on this race. It's other than out of all the big stakes run on Saturday, it's probably, I think, the most disappointing field. It's not really a grade one level sprint this year, like we've seen from the Forgo in the past.
Randy, I got to tell you, you got to up your game, pal. With that stuff that Zoe just gave us about Anchor, maybe she's the rabbit hole queen. We'll see.
I should have looked up a little more on Cagliostro or Mulliken or whatever here.
I know. You can do that next week.
My fault.
The race, the last race before the Travers is the Alan Jerkins Memorial. We're recording this on Tuesday. And as of Tuesday, trainer Derek Ryan has not decided whether Bookham Dano is going to run in this race. Bookham Dano, my favorite horse, is going to run in this race, or if he's going to go to Charlestown the night before. Now, remember, this horse is a gelding, so it doesn't matter to him if he wins a grade one or not. The Charlestown race is probably going to be a lot easier field than this one. So, if I'm managing this horse, I send him to Charlestown. But nonetheless, I'll pick him if he runs on the moon, because, that's just the way I feel about this horse.
Randy. Now, the Forgo might not be a true grade one stakes. The Alan Jerkins, if you could say grade one plus, that's what this one would be. And I did go down a rabbit hole on this particular horse. World record refers to a performance that's very, very, very strong. Okay. World record. And there is a book called Guinness, the Guinness Book of World Records, that pertains to this horse's name. Okay. Is that a rabbit hole? No, it's not a rabbit hole. I loved his last race. I think it was even better than the 101 Buyer Speed Figure would give it credit for. The runner-up in there, who he's going to be competing against here as well, a horse called Jefferson Street Godolphin, was coming off a huge win at Churchill Downs in his most recent race. And he separated from the field and did sort of a breakaway to try to catch world record. And they were both, way ahead of the rest of the competition. And world record just kept on running. And here's a situation where I don't mind the inside post position, because he's got speed, he'll control the pace. And if he runs his last race back again, I think he'll win. And better yet, he's 8-1 in the program.
This race goes through Pratt, and we're going to find out exactly how good of a handicapper Pratt and his agent Brad Pegram are, because Pratt was the rider of world record in his last start. He was the rider of, he picks domestic product. That's where I'm going to land. He just took down the Dwyer. He was also the rider of Prince of Monaco and Timberlake. So he had probably one of the top four choices anyway to go, and he sticks on domestic product. Big Black Beauty. He's a beautiful looking horse. So that is where I land, and we'll see just how good a handicapper he is.
And strangely, right, None of us go for Prince of Monaco, who was completely wiped out at the start of the Woody Stevens and still finishes to length behind Bookham Dano.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a good race. Really good.
So out on the West Coast, the feature on Saturday at Del Mar is the Pat O'Brien. And we're doing this on Tuesday. So if we talk about horses that we think are going to run and they're not, that's why we do this before the entries came out. But Randy, you're the senior Buscador guy. He's got to take on the Chosen Vron in here. Seven furlongs, I don't think that's long enough for this horse. No. I know it's getting him ready for the Breeders' Cup and probably the Pacific Classic, but I don't like him at the distance. So, you know, without even, I have no idea who else is going to run in there. But if it just, if it boils down to Senior Buscador or the Chosen Braun, I'll go for the Chosen Braun.
Yeah, I mean, some people are going to look at the numbers and they're going to say, okay, you know, Senior Buscador is a horse who can beat the Chosen Vron. He's sprinted before. He's done okay. I don't think this is a horse you can bet on in this particular race. A, he has, you know, he didn't bounce back quite as quickly from his overseas adventures this spring as they had originally hoped. And B, this is just strictly a race for fitness to propel him forward. In order to make the Breeders' Cup Classic with one more good distance race in between. They didn't run in this race because, hey, we can win the seven. They'd like to win it. They think he maybe can win it, but this is a means to an end, and this is the kind of race that you don't want to be betting on a horse like Senior Buscador, in my opinion. He'll be way back early, probably rally to finish a solid third, which would be exactly what they'd be looking for.
Yeah, an absolute starting point for Senior Buscador. I have Chosen Vron, Senior Buscador, Happy Jack, Big City Lights, and Raging Torrent. Now, Big City Lights, poor Big City Lights has never beat the Chosen Vron. He's up against him again. And this will be the Chosen Vron's prep. Unlike last year where he won, what, the Bing Crosby and then skipped and ran in the Breeders' Cup. This is going to be his race in between. So, yeah, it's his race to win.
Now, the rabbit hole for this horse, Bill, you remember Senior, the name Senior Buscador, right? You remember where it comes from?
It's the Prospector.
Mr. Prospector.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Exactly. I remember your
rabbit. That was good.
Very good.
The TD and Writers Room, also brought to you, as always, by the PHBA, the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. We've been talking for weeks about the Pennsylvania Day at the Races. Well, it's here, Monday, August 26th, park racing, $1 million in purses. All day just for Pennsylvania breds. That includes four $100,000 Pennsylvania bred stakes races. Post time kickoff, 12:40 p.m. Don't miss it. And for more information on that lucrative Pennsylvania bred program, you can go to pabred.com or you can just pick up the phone. Well, you don't pick up phones anymore. You just you pick up your mobile phone and you give them a call at 610-444-1050. You don't pick up the phone because you always have it in your hand nowadays, right? You never set it down.
The PA Horse Breeders Association presents the new and improved Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Six $100,000 stakes for PA sired, PA breds, and parks. Two 6-furlong contests on PA Derby Day. The 2-year-olds then go 7 furlongs on December 30th. The last two races are in August 2025 for 3-year-olds. Then $50,000 in breeder bonuses go to the top 3 horses in the series. For more, go to pabred.com.
Well, what we learned during the week, not a big surprise, but once again, they're having trouble with Rich Strike, trying to get this horse back to the races. It looks like they're finally going to pull the plug on this whole project. If Bill Mott can't get him right, I don't know that there's a trainer alive that could. He is what he is. I'd like to see him go out on top with a victory, but that apparently isn't going to happen. And, you know, now they'll find a place for him to stand as a sire. Randy, I remember before when we were talking about him, you predicted he will wind up in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a horse like Rich Strike, I mean, historically, the Japanese seem to value Kentucky Derby winners even more than American breeders do, especially those Kentucky Derby winners that are kind of regarded as maybe sort of flukish a little bit, let's say. Mind That Bird, if he wasn't a gelding, would have been a perfect stallion to go stand in Japan. So I think my prediction is that that's probably what you're going to see. Look, I think it's admirable that they tried to bring Rich Strike back and put him into training. We talk all the time about how horses are prematurely retired and how the breeding industry is the tail wagging the dog. So they gave it a shot. It's not going to work out. He couldn't stay sound enough. And we'll see where he winds up at stud. That's my prediction, though. Japan.
I've got one for you. He's in New York right now. I think he'd be perfect for New York breeders. If I'm a New York breeder with a farm in New York, I am hightailing it over to Bill Mott's barn and getting a good look at this big, good-looking horse because he does stand over a lot of ground and he couldn't look any better than he looks right now. So I think he should stand in New York. I just don't have a farm.
So the big race of the weekend was the Alabama, the contest to figure out who's the second best filly around with no Torpedo Anna in there. And boy, did that change the complexion of the race. If she had gone in there, you probably would have had four horses. She'd be 1-5. And we had, not a scintillating field, but a very good betting race. And really one of the more exciting races of the meet. Power Squeeze got the bob of the head over Candy. And I mean, they were going this right down to the wire. And I don't know the fellow that well, Jorge Delgado, but you have to feel good for him getting this big win, as of course he was the trainer of New York Thunder last year, who broke down and had to be euthanized in the Alan Jerkin Stakes. I'm sure he's very happy to get back to the winner's circle in Saratoga.
His first grade one win as well. His very first grade one win. And I have to say that, Chatelus went to the lead for trainer Mark Glatt, shipped in with Frankie Dettori, honest fractions, 23, 47, 111 and change. There was a little bumping at the head of the stretch. I think Miss Justify maybe took the worst of it, knocked her off of stride. But I didn't see the head on, but I saw enough from the pan. I firmly believe if Candide had got her head down, she's coming down, because she drifted all the way across the track under left-handed urging. And it's almost like herding. I think she probably cost the winner 5 or 6 lengths, just pushing her out all the way down the lane. I couldn't find the head on. I tried to find it this morning. But good run. She was the widest of all. Power Squeeze. Candide was wide. Power Squeeze went around her. She got her head down in time. But I think if it had been reversed, the winner would be coming down, Candide.
Although these are New York stewards.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, if there are any stewards that are more unpredictable than Churchill Downs stewards, it would be the New York Racing Association stewards, or the stewards in New York. I don't want to say they're Saratoga stewards, New York, because they're state stewards as well. Anyway,
right, only one works for Naira.
There you go. I've made that mistake before. Buyer Speed Figure, Alabama, 90. Last quarter, 26.71. It was an exciting duel back and forth. But again, it's one of these optical illusions. It was a competitive battle that was cool to watch, but neither one of them were running very fast. And they were drawing away from the horses behind them. So even though I picked Torpedo Anna in the Travers, this is the kind of race that would sort of make you think that the horses that Torpedo Anna has been running against are just, not all that sensational.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was kind of a weak, definitely a weak Alabama.
The feature race at Del Mar last weekend was the Del Mar Oaks. I think Zoe mentioned, I love good names for horses and cute names. Ice Cream, You Scream, trained by Phil D'Amato. This is a very nice horse. She's 4-for-4 lifetime. And so I think you mentioned something about when she was sold at some point in her career, and I forget what the price was, but the first time she went under the auction block was at Keeneland November in 2021, and she RNA'd for $9,000. Now she's a grade one winner. So that just goes to show you that the picking horses out of the sales is really an exact science. And a lot of people missed out on her. I would have had loved to have gotten her from, I would have paid 10 for her. How about that?
You could have got her for 145 at OBS April. And then she was offered up again at the Fazig digital sale for 330. So Little Red Feather still own a piece of her. She's a perfect 4-for-4. A daughter of Twirling Candy, and she got a great ride by Hector Berrios because she was on the lead. Umbi Rispoli aboard the favorite Whiskey Decision, I think, made an early move at the half-mile pole and took off like a scolded cat. Hector just sat there, went to the outside, and she finished on the wrong lead, but hey, who cares? It's a grade one race, and she's now 4-for-4, unbeaten.
Yep.
Fun.
Everything that Zoe said, I agree with. Solid effort, and he's a horse that's going to be fun to watch going forward.
Yeah. It is time for the XBTV Work of the Week, and who else could we choose this week other than Torpedo Anna? Now, we've talked a lot about her already. This is her working a sharp 5 furlongs in Saratoga on Saturday in 59.81. You'll see here on the outside of her workmate, Elko County, that is the ageless Danny Ramsey in the saddle, 75 years young, with a double handful there, absolutely pulling him out of the saddle. After the work, Kenny McPeak told the TDN Tim Wilkin that she is hitting on all cylinders and that her exercise rider, Danny Ramsey, thinks she's better than ever. She'll take on the boys in this Saturday's Travers Stakes. Make sure you get your pink on for Saturday. We'll be right back after this message from XBTV.
Be a smarter better with XBTV. The best horses. With thousands of exclusive morning workouts. All at your fingertips and delivered right into your inbox. Everything you need to be informed. Be smart. Bet smart with XBTV.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TDN Writers' Room is also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Now, West Point added 5 yearlings between the Fassig Tipton Select and New York Bred Sales at Saratoga and will also be zeroing in on the Keeneland September sale next week. Vava was a Keeneland September acquisition in 2021, and she'll be in action on Travers Day at Saratoga on Saturday in the Grade 1 Ballerina Handicap, looking to cement her status as the leader in the Philly and Mare Sprint Division. And she'll be my top pick in there as well, guys. West Point will also, don't forget, have Don't Look Back at All in Friday's Smart and Fancy Stakes at Saratoga, bidding for her fourth straight stakes triumph. That was a mouthful. To learn more, visit westpointtb.com.
That's a wrap on this week's edition of the Thoroughbred Daily News Writers Room podcast, brought to you by Keeneland. I want to thank my partners, Randy Moss and Zoe Cabin. I want to thank our Green Group guest of the week, Ted Nicholson, and our behind-the-scenes folks who do the production, Katie Petruniak, Anthony LaRocca, and Aaliyah LaRocca. Randy, got any final thoughts for us?
Yeah, Lucy back here told me that she agrees with Zoe. It's Scylla and not Skilla. So there you go.
And remember to wear pink on Saturday if you're a Torpedo Anna fan.
You can wear your pink dress in private, Bill.
I think I'll pass. So
send pics. We promise we won't post them. No, it'll never see the light of day.
Yeah.
Bill has a good set of pins on him. He's probably got a good set of legs.